You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bandwagon Nerds is taped in front of a live studio audience. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. It's your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com, where we encourage you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Much love to Christopher Platt. We have a great, great show in front of you today. The dogs agree. That's right. We are going to talk more Doom Patrol. We have the season 2 premiere of Lock and Key from Netflix. Great episode to kick things off. Very, very excited to talk about that. And then we're going to get to, it's an interesting day. We're going to do a quick visit to the trailer park, a couple of, only a few trailers, only three trailers, though. One kind of big one that PC Tunney, the live studio audience, brought to the table, and then one that came out actually a couple of weeks ago, but hasn't hit theaters yet, and I figure is worth a time to talk about before we get into news around the nerdosphere, which this week will be a hodgepodge. I mentioned the live studio audience. That's right, PC Tunney is here and happy to be here.
Thank you. 75 this morning. Thank you.
The lawyer, David Ungar, is here.
Greetings and salutations, as Mr. Say.
Oh, yeah.
Look at you go. Well, you
get to use that. You're his consigliere.
That's true.
I still please and thank you and please on occasion as well. So, I mean, I'm just out there as, you know, usual, oppressing my good friends. And of course, unfortunately, sadly, we are short the Reverend Ray Cash this week. I know. And I hear you. The last
Ray is repainting the parking lot lines of his local Walmart as he won a raffle there to be able to do so. It's kind of a Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn kind of thing.
Yes, Ray. Totally shitty.
They made it look fun. I mean, hey, come on, help me cut this grass, paint this fence.
That is true, but yeah, Ray, life got in the way this week, so Ray is not going to be with us. Unfortunately, we will miss you, Ray, even if the live studio audience does not. And don't think they've forgotten about you, Ray Cash. They know what to do when we say your name. Disliked even in his absence.
No love for Men of the Cloth here.
No love for Men of the Cloth. Hey, guys, I wanted to go back to a conversation we had at the end of last week's show when I did Patrick O'Dowd Has a Question, because I've started something and I didn't realize what I started when I did this. If you all recall, during Patrick O'Dowd's A Question, I asked you guys to tell me about your favorite Treehouse of Horror sketches, which was very, very difficult for one PC Tunney, because he's watched The Simpsons as much as I have, and so we had so many to go through. Dave and Ray were a little bit more selective in their viewings. However, the reason that question came to pass was because I had introduced the little O'Dowd to Treehouse of Horror. The little O'Dowd, in less than 2 weeks, watched all 32 available Treehouse of Horror episodes on Disney Plus, and the extra Halloween episode that is in a random season that is like a true Halloween episode before Treehouse of Horror.
Let me tell you, I haven't watched this year's yet. I'm saving it for Halloween night.
That is excellent. I didn't know this was going to become a thing. And so wish that, because they're on season 33, right? Or is 32? Yeah.
It's there somewhere. It's been a long time. I remember being, 7 or 8 years old watching the first one on Tracy Ullman Show.
Yeah, there's definitely 32, or there's definitely 32 seasons and only 31 Treehouse of Horror episodes, because there wasn't one in season one. However, all of that is to say, I created a monster. Because the little O'Dowd then decided that we will watch every episode of The Simpsons starting with season one, episode one.
Did you do that yet?
We started, he's on episode 10 or 11. He's actually watching an episode right now as we record.
What are his thoughts on old Homer versus angry Homer versus goofy Homer? Have you talked about that yet? Because he had to notice right away the difference between Homer, you know, in the seasons, you know, 15, 16, 27, 28, as opposed to the first season, even the second.
You know, we haven't really explored that yet. He's been more of a Bart guy because he's 9. So I do think it's interesting, you know, if you talk about the evolution of that show, how it went from a Bart-centric show to it's very much a Homer-centric show. Mm-hmm. And without question. And I don't even remember when that flip happened, but I remember the marketing was all about Bart Simpson for the longest time. He had the Halloween or the Thanksgiving holiday parade float for a while. The don't have a cowman shirt. Like that was all long he was time. About. And then it flipped.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it totally did. You're absolutely right.
And so now anytime in the O'Dowd household that there is downtime, the little O'Dowd is like Simpsons. And so I'm going to be watching The Simpsons for like the rest of my life because there's
could
a lot
be worse. Could be worse. When he becomes a teenager, then you can introduce him to Family Guy.
I hate that show.
Oh,
we haven't talked about how much I hate the Family Guy, do we? And I think it's an overrated show. I think it's, I don't know. I don't like it. Anyway, we can have that fight another day. Ranks right up there with my dislike of The Office and Seinfeld.
K.
And your dislike of Scrubs, Tony. It's kind of in that whole
thing. Yeah, you take that, Patrick. This is bullshit. All three of those shows are like my three favorite shows ever.
Well, now that you've blasphemed Scrubs, I think it's fair that we just move in and hand this over to Dave to give us some Doom Patrol music and talk about Bird Patrol. Dave, hit it. All right. So, Tony, after watching episode 7 of Doom Patrol, hold on, I'm gonna get Twitter here because I like to quote people. In the bandwagon nerds chat, where's he? Tony got to roll up a little bit because Ray Cash was very, very busy. And then there's news. And then, here it was. PC Tony, after watching, first of all, now playing Bird Patrol, Up next, Lock and Key, Season 2, Episode 1. We get a little bit of that all of a sudden. Okay, what the, in capital letters, fuck was that? To which my response was, you didn't see birds. And you were like, yeah. Oh yeah, thanks. Got it. I just love when Doom Patrol
right up, man.
Doom Patrol pulls out the weird. And it was such an interesting episode because all of the threads that the rest of the characters have been like working on get pulled away from them, like in the middle of them working out their deal to be summoned by the Sisterhood of Dada, where we kind of learned it was Rita Farr all along. And time loop questions notwithstanding, the great, I always forget what the name of that. What's the name of that process, Dave? You probably remember it.
Which one?
The Sisterhood of Dada's great, like whatever.
Eternal flagellation.
Eternal flagellation as Cliff seems to think it is. As the eternal flagellation begins, and we learn that Rita plays a big part of unleashing it on everyone. And yet, does anybody have any idea what's going
on? Tony, you got any ideas about whatever Patrick is going to say there?
Yeah, I don't know.
There he is.
Does anybody have any idea about what, Patrick?
Yeah. Does anybody have any idea what the hell that we really saw there, as we see like the rebirth reincarnation of Birdcage guy hatching Malcolm? From an egg out of Marcus. A cage. Hey, yeah, Malcolm.
Malcolm. Marcus, one of those M names. Well,
and then the thing was, Laura was supposed to do it, but Rita did it. So does that mean something different happened? I mean, if Laura would have done it, would it have been one person or, you know, so many fucking questions. We haven't even got to what happened to some of the other characters so this week too, but yeah, this is just fucking insane. I mean, I love the fact that they're all in a separate dimension doing the dance together, like just having a good old time, you know. Oh, is this the worst of the flagellation? And oh no.
Yeah, I mean, I love the show, but this season has been really off the rails so far. It's like, wow, what is it?
I'm digging it, I guess, still. How about you?
I am. And I'm sure they're going to bring it all together, but it is really out there this year. I mean, the biggest part of this episode to me was we finally found out where Laura kind of went off the rails and where she goes from being Laura DeMille to Madame Rouge and kind of the motivations as to why she ends up being the the mark of the, you know, the target of the Sisterhood of Dada later on, where she goes from best friends to, you know, she's responsible for a lot of this shit that went wrong with them.
Huh? For weaponizing.
Yes.
For betraying them.
Kind of got forced to it.
Right. And that's the thing, is they've really done, I think, a pretty adept job of showing that, you know, Laura DeMille was sinister, yet also as an audience, I think you can feel for her a little bit because she feels trapped and stuck. And, you know, she has that moment with the officer in the cafeteria that then prompts the betrayal.
She's manipulated because, big time.
Yes. And felt like she was forced. And she truly, you do learn that she remembers by the time we get to the park or wherever the forest, wherever that's happening. And again, it becomes Rita pulling the strings.
Yeah, it is. It's Rita pulling the strings. It's motivated by, you know, the death of, God, what is his name? Malcolm or Marcus? I don't really know.
I'm pretty sure it's Malcolm.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big motivation for Rita, is some sort of retribution for Malcolm. We also learned that it was Malcolm who was the disfigured guy in the afterlife, you know, and that gets solved. Okay, that's where she knows him from. So Yeah, I mean, it's Rita. This season has been very Rita centric, and everybody else is kind of bit players. But I got to tell you, Pat, my wife popped for the whole parasite thing where we talked about it last week. Well, what do you do when a parasite comes out of your mouth? He says, give it a name. And my wife lost it for that. You know?
So, yeah, that was, and you know, what's funny is I was worried that that would be lost on me like the second time around. And yet it wasn't. I was like, oh no, I still find it funny. thanks, you guys.
Know, you talk about it being Rita centric, but she was the one picked by Niles to, you know, take the key and carry the cross and the banner, right? Like, she was picked to be leader of this group. So, I mean, I think that kind of sparked her into trying to figure out who and what she really was, because now if you look at it, she just kind of has twice washed her memory from time travel, right? And had to start over again.
Yeah, it's, you know, we still love Rita, right?
Sure.
I mean, listen, yeah, absolutely. Listen. April Bixby can call me at any time of the night. Let me tell you, I've been a huge fan of hers back since she did like April a guest ball. Bowlesby.
They can both call you.
I guess so. We'll find out about the other one. I'll let you know. But back even when she did an episode or two of Two and a Half Men back in the day, you could tell she was just a very attractive woman.
Absolutely. So, we don't know. I can't wait to see where this all leads come next week in terms of, you know, these bird things are flying into people and what does it do to them? But we had a bunch of other threads that we were, that the rest of the group was sort of sorting out. Like Dave talked about the parasite that he left in the forest and got pulled away from. Cyborg was in the midst of going forward with his whole operation for a synthetic skin, had outreach to his girl, and I'm going to forget her name again because that's what I do on the show, Ronnie, and talked to her for a little bit, and she was trying to talk him out of doing it before he gets pulled away. You have Cliff trying so hard and still fucking up. He tries so hard. And bless his heart, how were you with me, guys? Did you think he was going to go on and fucking waste all kinds of money with his daughter's credit card? Absolutely. Were you there? Because I thought for sure.
I'm not sure he didn't. I'm not sure he didn't, because how much time elapsed there and it's sitting there on the counter?
I don't think he did.
I hope not.
I think everything he was doing around the house was an effort to keep himself from doing that, because he has a spending addiction online, and I think he was just doing everything he could to avoid it, hence why he nearly burned the house down warming up the baby's milk.
We got a big revelation about Jane and how the underworld works and the motivations going on there, that a lot of the underworld characters are not motivated by what's best for Kay anymore, but by what's best for them. And you got that disclosed. Not that you couldn't see it coming, but
I was going to say, I might have said that last week, but, you know, I wasn't going to brag.
You should. You were right.
Smart thing. Though it was interesting, because I will say I was wrong in that I thought Jane knew what they were up to. In the previous episode, it seemed like their confrontation was, I'm trying to talk. I can't handle those sorts of distractions.
She's ready for it.
She was ready for it. But Jane, I thought she knew what the motivation of the other personalities were. This time if she didn't know, they hammered her over the head with it, with this whole, they don't want to go away. And so find a way to hurt the immature Kay, and make her to where she doesn't want to go back to the surface, even if that's what's best for the little girl. So the personalities have rebelled, which I would be very interested to understand a study of, like, multiple personality, you know, dissociative disorder, and sort of this idea of these various personalities, and whether this is just a comic book crazy, or if this is something that might have some actual background to it.
Well, I think I kind of touched on it before. I like where you're going to know what the actual science behind it is with this kind of disorder. But we're getting to the point where these other personalities are realizing that if, you know, like we said, if Jane has her way and Kay gets better, they're going to start to disappear. So now they've bonded together, right? You had that whole scene where she was confronted. So I would love to see, like I said, I'll say it last week, I'll say it again. I would love to see a large majority of these non-consistent, you know, attention-getting personalities go away. And let's leave it with Jane and, you know, three or four others and have a little bit more of a selective and more intense, in-depth battle between just a few personalities as opposed to however many we got in there, a whole NCAA tournament, Dave, I think.
There's 64 at least. But I loved how when Cliff is explaining to Jane how he sold all of this shit, Jane gets pissed off, turns into Flit, and teleports him to his daughters and say, "Here, you can go deal with this shit for a while." That was great. There's so much good going on with the show, even if it's just completely bonkers at times. And yeah, like you were mentioning Cyborg, man, the Eternal Flagellation rescued him from making a colossal mistake. And even the doctor who's there is talking about, yeah, we can do this, but I don't really think it should be done. But he's just dead set on, in his mind, this is what his mom wanted for him. And this is how he gets normal, air quoting normal. Yeah, I think there's more to that.
We've got three episodes left to sort it out. They're going to survive the Sisterhood of Dada, and then I think we're going to have at least one episode, maybe two, managing the aftermath. And I'd be willing to bet the specter of Niles Calder appears before we get to that 10th episode. And I think that's going to do it for Doom Patrol this week, because we really, I think next week we got to react to the eternal flagellation.
Yeah,
that's our next step.
There's, like last week when we talked fandom, the one thing we didn't get into in too much detail was season 4 has been confirmed for this show. So the prospects of them leaving us with a cliffhanger increase exponentially. We'll see what they do in the next 3 episodes. But yeah, you got to figure Niles and Dorothy are coming back in some fashion.
Last thing I want to ask you guys, and I'm not sure if I wasn't paying attention or not, but do we think that the parasite caterpillar thing is still a spirit? Because I kind of do.
I hope so. He certainly thinks so.
Well, I mean, he ate it a peanut butter jelly sandwich, left it a water bottle and a scarf. I mean,
it's so great because Larry, he starts off just like, I'm going to abandon this stupid thing in the woods. And then he keeps going back to take care of it. Like it's part of him. He's being maternalistic with it. So who knows what it is.
Because it wasn't a parasite. He gave birth to it. And so I think it gives credence to your theory, Tony.
Did either of you think that maybe it was a parasite because Jane was about to barf up the same thing and she ended up barfing up a flagellation flag? Remember that?
I was wondering what was going to come out of that.
And then she grabbed it and started pulling it like a scarf. I'm like, okay, I really thought she was having a parasite too. I thought maybe that was it.
Oh gosh. Well, only one parasite, and I'm sure that is going to come back to roost next week. But we've got another show to cover, guys, before we go into our first commercial break. And it is the first time that we get to bust this theme back out this year. And just like that, we are into season 2 of Lock and Key. Now, I know some of you Netflix fans out there saw Lock and Key season 2 debut in total on Netflix like they do and watched every single episode. Well, here on the bandwagon, we like to give each episode its undivided attention, its deserved attention. And so we're going to cover them one episode at a time until we get to episode 10, just in time to toss our coins to the Witcher. That's going to be a good, good run for us. And just, guys, I got to tell you, I know some of you out there named Dave and Ray are really like, we must cover every Marvel Cinematic show on the show. I'm kind of okay with a break from the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the television realm, and to get back to some of these shows that we've covered previously. I'm very excited to do that. Thank God for 3-minute recaps, because I'd forgotten so much about this show. And I freaked out because you know how when you load up the show on Netflix, that it highlights automatically skip recap or skip intro? I thought it was just the intro, and I hit it, and I was like, no! And then the recap went away, and it went right into the episode, and I couldn't bring the – I was like, okay, I'll just rewind it to get back to the recap. No, because they made the recap. It's a little 3-minute thing. So, like, I had to exit the episode, go back into the menu. It's at the very bottom of the episode list. It's, like, the very last option. So I picked up, you know, and got my 3-minute recap to kind of get my brain back where it was supposed to be. Then I'm like, okay, I'm ready to skip the opening credits. And it wouldn't let me skip the intro on episode one. And I went, what the fuck, Netflix? Gave me an option to skip the recap. He won't give me an option to skip the intro. Like, what's happening here? What's happening here is that Dodge/Echo has a new best friend in the body of one Eden Hawkins. And we got some demons running amok already, making new keys. We haven't even managed the old keys. We got new keys. Uncool. Also, Eden ate a dude, and that was a little messed up.
Yeah. I gotta say, I can't believe how much I missed this show until it started again. And it had been so long since we stopped talking about it. I mean, sometime in 2020 we stopped talking about it. But man, what a great episode though. I mean, just to kick this thing back off, I mean, you forgot about the whole Scott, Kinsey, Gabe dynamic, and then they quickly bring you back in on that whole thing, and you just I didn't recognize Eden at first. And then, it's like, well, she doesn't look quite the same as season one, but, oh, that's definitely a variation of her. But I thought the big thing is the concept of what came to the forefront immediately in season two, the first episode, this concept of at what point in your life do you forget magic? And that's a big thing going on now with Tyler and his girlfriend, because she is a few weeks away from turning 18. She doesn't remember what the keys are. And their mother, of course, doesn't remember what the keys are. And now Tyler's kind of feeling under the gun as to, shit, how much longer do I have before I forget what's going on?
Well, don't forget, they made Nina forget.
No, they didn't. The alcohol made her remember. They just made her stop drinking. Oh,
that's what it was. I was like, I know there was a reason why she doesn't remember stuff, but she does remember stuff. Like, it's always hazy and fuzzy.
There was a reason why she remembered stuff, not why she doesn't remember stuff. She doesn't remember stuff because she's old and that's the way it works. She remembered it because she became an alcoholic and was constantly fucked up, and that's how she would remember.
Got you. You talked about the love triangle with Gabe, who is a made-up person. And it is really Dodge/Echo. I gotta tell you, Tyler just is the most boring character to me. Like, I don't care about Tyler at all. Like, I'm like, you're dumb. You don't listen to your little brother. But by the way, I'm glad we brought that trope back where Bodhi says, hey, this might be important. And the older siblings are like, nah.
Yeah. No, Bodhi's been the smartest one the whole time.
We're going to pat you on the head. Bodhi finds a giant skull and says, hey, we should worry about this. You know what? You should worry about it, because Bodhi's right. There's giant rats somewhere. They're going to show up. Rats in the corn. They're going to be there. I don't know where, but they're going to show up.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tony.
I love that we got they made a key, so we see that that can happen, right? But that's a demon key. What kind of different powers is that going to have?
No idea.
Woody found the Hercules key, and he's wearing the strongman belt, and I think that's pretty fucking awesome. You know, all he had to do is tilt that couch about 45 degrees, and first you get the you get the first arm out, and then you can bring it through and L it out the other side. So you know, he didn't have to destroy the room. Episode
where Ross is trying to get the damn sofa up the stairs. Pivot.
Pivot. Pivot. I'm looking forward to other keys we're going to get. I like how Tyler's girlfriend, what's her name?
Jackie.
Zelina.
Jackie.
Zelina Vega. Queen Zelina.
Zelina. she was down to use the keys, right? Right before she forgot about the keys. So, you know, they threw some books in the head key, and so she learned that quick. But I'm interested to see what other keys we're going to find. And then especially how this relationship with Kinsey and Gabe is going to go. And obviously with Dodge and I guess, what's her name?
Eden.
Eden is a demon now because she got hit by that. And they used that extra pebble to make that key. So that was interesting.
Right.
The last thing I had one more thing. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, I'm very impressed by the first episode. Can't wait to see where they're going this year. Obviously, it's all about Tyler losing his remembrance of the keys. Oh, yeah. Kinsey. She's 19, so I can say this, but man, them stems got nice and long.
Oh, Jesus. What Todd, do we make?
Todd, I'm sorry. That long legs. Okay. Stacey Keebler.
What do we make of the little origin story of the portal that we got to open the episode from 1774 or 5, whenever it was? And was that Revolutionary War soldier hit by Dodge / Echo, or do we think it's someone else? Does he come back?
Yeah, I mean, the opening scene I thought was important because they opened the portal. But
there's no door.
So who put the door there? Somebody puts a door there at some point in time to keep people from getting into this space, which is, I mean, it's a portal to some dark dimension. That's for sure. Because if you get struck by these projectiles, you become demonic. I figure it's got to convey some sort of immortality. We don't know how old Dodge is. You presume centuries at least.
Well, is that Dodge?
That's what I'm asking. Is like, is that Dodge? Like, will we like see?
That's what they were kind of hinting at.
But maybe.
But if getting hit by that makes you a demon, how long until you become an Echo? Because Dodge clearly stated to Eden that you can die. I can't die. I'm an Echo. You can die. You're just a demon. Like over time, right. You turn into an Echo. Is that what the well was about?
I don't know. I don't know what the myth, like there's some mythology that I don't think that they've revealed to us yet.
Well, I'm okay with
that, which is fine. Yeah. Some mystery around it because there is a distinction between Dodge / Echo and Eden who can die and also has some serious impulse control because she hasn't been on Earth and is having some issues. So it's going to be interesting. I wonder how much longer it'll be before the game is given up with Gabe. I was a little disappointed that one of the the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, Echo/Gabe/Dodge thinks that she has Kinsey all wrapped around her finger, but it is very clear that Scott is still number one to Kinsey, and I think that's going to come into play as we get later on, as she can't get the boy out of her head, and I think he's going to save her in some way.
There's only one T in that Scott, by the way. But yep. Do you guys think there's more to Uncle Duncan than meets the eye?
Yes, I that's why I question whether or not it's you reach a certain age and you forget about it, because I think he remembers.
I think his fiance has something to do with it too. I kind of got that, like you're buttering. I don't get the fact that I didn't think he was buttering up the mom, future sister-in-law to, as part of like a family knowing. I thought it was more of like, I'm trying to become, unsuspicious here, and kind of stealthily sneak in under the radar.
And what's the deal with wanting to have the wedding at Key House? You know, nothing ever goes wrong with ritualistic ceremonies at haunted sites, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Hey, Patrick, what's the deal with wanting to have the wedding at the Key House?
I was going to make that joke, but you beat me to it. Dave, just to be clear, that house is not haunted. It's magic. And on a portal to a demonic dimension where you get shot by magic weird bullets.
That's not haunted.
But haunted implies like spirits, like, you know, Indian burial ground business and stuff like that. None of that's going on.
Seems like magic to me.
Magic, not haunted. That's all I'm saying.
Semantics.
All right.
Semantics.
Good magic. Good semantics. Magic, bad magic. Dark magic.
Well, we got a long way to go. I think if I saw correctly, we've got 10 episodes of Lock and Key. So we got 9 episodes to go with a lot more to talk about. We're going to go ahead and end episode 1 here and take our first commercial break. When we come back in 1 minute and 16 seconds, we're going to take a little visit to the trailer park. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of the Chairshot.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, we are back, and as I promised, gentlemen, we are going to get excited with the dogs. The dogs are happy to be here. Hey there, kiddos. But we're going to take a little visit to the trailer park. And if we're going to visit the trailer park, that means we have to get Dave to cue up some music. So, Dave, if you wouldn't mind. All right, excellent. Dog approved. And gentlemen, we're only going to talk about three trailers this week here in the park. But the first one that we're going to talk about, I want to congratulate first time ever contributor to the trailer park, one Mr. PC Tunney, who in our chat yesterday was like, hey, this looks really good. I think I'm going to check it out. And so I clicked on the trailer for a show debuting on Netflix. I'm not even sure when it debuted, called Inside Job. And it's funny. I went to like IMDb this thing. You're going to hear me type. I'm sorry there, everybody. There it is. Because I wanted to know who it's an animated series. And I wanted to know who the voice cast was. So looking, because that's really where I like to start. And so seeing the names, the likes of Lizzie Kaplan and Christian Slater, I'm in. But Tony, you found this show. Why don't you tell us what it is that appealed to you about this wacky secret government agency responsible for, I guess, maintaining urban legends, government secret. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued as to what's going to happen here.
It's kind of a spoof on all the government conspiracy theorists and all their theories over the years actually being real and the government having to maintain the lack of believability that is by the general public as opposed to the few that think, you know, there's a Loch Ness monster, there's a Bigfoot, there's a Sasquatch, you know, Roswell may very well be a lot more than we thought, you know, it actually is what it is, but other things like that, right? And then there's this whole team of people underground government that are trying to do this, and the president is going to be a robotic president now, and I think she's a scientist or something like that who's running this all behind the scenes and trying to keep her father under control, who... Did he used to be the president, or was he some bigger higher up? He used to run the organization.
Yeah. That's what it's. And so, I got a big kick. That's that guy. That's the guy who's voiced by Christian Slater, by the way.
Oh, and that's amazing character, because this is the guy who goes around and is just like you don't believe him because he smells like booze and looks like a homeless guy and is the Chicken Little shouting the, you know, the end is near with the sign and nothing's happening. But everything you think he's saying is probably right. So I think it's a really intellectual comedy that I think I'm personally definitely going to enjoy, especially from seeing the preview there. I can't wait to see the character development here as well with some of the tertiary characters outside of the father-daughter relationship.
Ron Funches voices the Mothman in that skit too. And he's like, hello everyone, I'm Mothman. He's like the human resources guy or something. It's just bizarre. There's all kinds of wackadoodle stuff out there. Hey, oh, go ahead.
The weather's controlled by bloodletting.
Right. Dave, what were your thoughts on the trailer for Inside Job? And are you in on watching the show? No, we will not cover it on Bandwagon Nerds.
My thoughts are it didn't appear on the rundown, so I didn't watch it. No, I did.
Really, dude? Really? You're going to steal Tony's moment?
Yeah, no. I wasn't on the rundown, so I forgot that you said, yeah, we're going to cover it. I just kind of watched it right now. But Call me Ray Cash.
Don't boo him.
Probably hasn't even watched Flash Gordon.
I've watched it 37 times, unlike one Raymond Cash. But
37?
37? I just watched the trailer. I didn't hear what was going on, but Tunney's explanation makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, if you're telling me it's a story about conspiracies that are real, and they're all real, then yeah, that's got my interest immediately, just to see how crazy and off the wall it can be. But you're talking about guys introducing themselves as a Mothman, and that sounds extraordinarily fun. So I know we're not going to be covering it on the show, and God knows there's 100,000 other things to watch at the same time, but sure. If Tunney says it's good, it probably is. So he doesn't make bad choices.
You might as well have just said K with that kind of response, man. A very lukewarm response. I thought you'd be more excited for this.
I don't know. Okay, there you go. Feel better now?
I do. I feel a little bit better. Okay, well, let's move on then to, yes, there you go. You saw what I did there. Let's move on to our second trailer, and one that I actually want to talk about, kind of a bigger subject when we talk about it. A couple of weeks ago, a trailer dropped for the newest, it's a sequel, but it's almost like a reboot of the Scream franchise. It's titled Scream, just like the original. It has the core three members of the cast from the original film, Nev Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette. But it's Ghostface killing another generation of teenagers connected to the original cast. Before we get into what we thought of this trailer, thoughts on the Scream franchise in general. I always thought the original Scream was terrific as a slasher film that is highly intelligent, doesn't take itself too seriously, mocks its own tropes while still following them in telling a good and compelling story. What were your guys' feelings about the Scream franchise back in the day? Dave, why don't we start with you this time?
I think I watched like the first one and then have only caught parts of the other ones. It's a unique franchise in that it pokes fun at the whole genre of horror movies while at the same time being horrifying. So that's a neat trick to pull off. I've always found the series to be very intelligent, I guess would be the best word to describe it. The way they approach things and just kind of the way they spin things on their head a little bit. And it's, you know, you can't say anything else about it other than that the longevity and the popularity of the franchise speaks volumes for what Scream is all about. And now here you are. I don't know when the first one came out, somewhere in the 90s, I'm guessing.
Late 90s, yep.
And now here you are 20-some years later. It's spawned a TV series that I understand is very good, and it's still very relevant. And, yeah, now you've got this merging of old and new kind of coming in together for this brand new – it's not a reboot. I guess it's a sequel is the best way I can figure
it out. And not just that it spawned all these sequels and TV series. I mean, the Scary Movie franchise of parody or that, I mean, that's straight after Scream, like, and use that whole genre as well. By the way, Scary Movie 1, low-key, one of the best parody comedies I've ever seen in my life. Every Scary Movie after that, not good at all. Tony, your thoughts on the Scream franchise, and why don't you take us into your thoughts on the trailer?
How many were there? More than one Scream, right?
There's like five or six. There's a lot. Give me a second. I'll IMDb it.
So I feel like, yeah, we're just continuing this. I think this is obviously, there's going to be another one with the same character, I think, here. I mean, unless they get killed and this is just something they're doing once, but there's money to be made here. There's a whole new generation for it. It looks like it's Nev Campbell's daughter, if I'm not mistaken, who's the one that initially gets attacked and gets away. So I'm here for it. I'm going to watch it because it's been a while. The first one's really good. The Scary Movie first one's really good as well. So it's that part of horror I don't necessarily mind too much, although it's not necessarily a horror movie. It's just kind of the concept they're using to tell the story and have some comedy along the way.
Right. There. This will be the fifth Scream movie, actually. And the first Scream,
there were four.
Yeah. The first Scream debuted in 1996, and again, which was like a love letter to horror movies while being a horror movie. And Wes Craven is just always very tongue-in-cheek with the way that he does his horror films anyway. Nightmare on Elm Street is very much, you know, scary but funny at the same time. He has this interesting sense of humor about it. But I've noticed this is the second sort of film that I've seen come out in the last, you know, 5 years where we're continuing this franchise after a long, and I guess Halloween doesn't count, maybe, because it just seems like it's always perpetually had some, like Rob Zombie's made Halloween movies, though they weren't really part of the Halloween canon. But then this last little spate where we've had, was it Halloween and Halloween Kills, the 2018 and this 2021 additions to what seemed to be a sequel to the second Halloween film, if we're really looking at sort of the whole spate of things, because we're keeping Jamie Lee Curtis, though she came back for other Halloween movies as well. What is American Horror just tapped for ideas? And that's where we are now, is because I really, what's good creative horror coming out of the United States? Because I don't know that there is. And it American seems like this is the trend.
American Horror Story.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, you're asking what's good. It's the TV show. Oh, throw the ball away, Jesus Christ.
I haven't seen that one yet. Is that a good horror movie, Tony?
Oh, Jesus.
No, Rodgers is dancing around in the fucking end zone, getting sacked almost before he throws the goddamn. Anyway, sorry. I apologize.
People in the stands, he's throwing football bullets and they're hitting people in the face and killing them. Oh, God, don't throw the ball away.
The thing about horror is there is no shortage of great horror stories out there that have never seen the light of day for a series or anything. I don't understand what the reluctance is from a movie studio standpoint of maybe take a chance on something other than, you know, you look at something like Malevolence, which you and I despise, Pat.
I thought that was horrible. Yeah.
And so you see kind of, I think, and that makes people gun shy when you take a shot on a unrecognized franchise and it just fails that badly that I don't know if that's got some sort of effect on studios saying, you know, I don't want to take a chance, but there are so many good stories from so many authors out there.
I guess that's my thing is that did horror, like, and maybe it's just I'm old. Maybe I'm an old curmudgeon, as we've talked about. And this is my, you know, horror was great in the 80s and early 90s. And then just, I don't even know that I agree with that because I saw, you know, I thought The Ring was brilliant, you know, but that's an Asian horror flick. The Grudge. Audition, which I think is one of the most low-key horrifying films ever made, and that again came out of Japan, horror out of Korea. Funny Games, which came out, that's in the 90s, that was, I want to say Dutch was the original version before it made its way over to the States. I guess Midsummer was a really good horror flick, but that's more along the lines of like the Wicker Man sort of storytelling. What was that other? There was another one, and I'm going to forget the name of it, where it's like a possession movie, and it starred, Gabriel Byrne was in it. It made its debut on, I'm going to have to look for it. But it's about like, there's like this creepy little girl. There's a dollhouse. Her mom is like, feels like she's slowly going insane. And it turns out like the son is the chosen vessel of this like demon. There's like, it's like a cult worshiping movie. And your face tells me you have no idea what I'm referring to.
It sounds familiar. I just couldn't tell you the name of it. But let me pose this question to you. When is the last time that an iconic horror character really came to the forefront? I mean, you look at, like, you talk about the 80s, we had Freddy, we had Jason, we had Michael Myers in his heyday in the 80s. You know, you've got stuff like that. I mean, you could even stretch this out and say the tall guy from the Phantasm series was kind of iconic as well. And then
Jigsaw.
Yeah. I mean, Jigsaw, sure. Ghostface from Scream. Okay. I'll grant you that, but
Hereditary was the movie I was trying to think.
But I mean, I think that's what's missing from horror movies right now is that you can do these one-offs that are really good, like, you know, along the lines of like Conjuring and stuff like that. But we're really missing that iconic character that is the stuff that you can wrap a franchise around, like a Jason, like a Michael, like a Freddy. And we just haven't had that I mean, Candyman's the closest thing that I can think of recently. And that really doesn't count because it's two movies.
It's cinema in general.
Maybe
nothing
Penny,
new
maybe
is
Penny,
come up.
Pennywise, but that's a retread, you know.
Well, and Pennywise is, you know, based out of a book, and it's a finite story. Like, they're not like Stephen King does for all his faults. Like, outside of the Children of the Corn franchise, which, like, he walks by in the rose, like that's like a billion movies, but that landed itself in B movie hell and originated in the 1980s. So maybe it's just that we're a couple of old men. We love, you know, when we were, you know, in our 20s and teens and those horror movies and that's kind of it. But
You can say that, but I mean, then you look at what they're doing with Halloween, which is it makes money. We're going to bring back Scream because Ghostface makes money. Yeah. So I don't know if we're curmudgeons or financially irresponsible.
I don't know. I just, it seems like it's like you said, I feel like there could be some good stories to tell and we're not really getting them. And that could be me. Let us know on the Bandwagon Nerds Twitter feed what you think. Is there good horror out there, and what should the Bandwagoners be watching? All right, last trailer this week in the trailer park. We've been hearing all about this Uncharted movie. We knew Tom Holland was going to be taking on the role of, I do believe the name is Nathan Drake. And I say this because I have the Uncharted movies downloaded on my PlayStation as part of some promotional thing that they did, and I have yet to play a second of those games. I hear they're a lot of fun.
Start with the second one.
But we got our first trailer this week, and I know Ray, and I kind of wish Ray was here, was very excited about this trailer, was like, I wasn't sure about whether or not I was going to see this, and now I was on board. Okay, here's my thing, and then I'm going to leave it at that. Every time I saw Tom Holland on the screen doing a stunt, I was like, oh, look, he's doing a Spider-Man pose. Oh, look, he's doing a Spider-Man jump. Oh, look, he's talking kind of like Peter Parker from Spider-Man. I am worried that I have completely given myself over to I only see Tom Holland as Spider-Man, and that might hurt my enjoyment of this movie.
If you haven't played the games, that would be an easy assumption to make. Tony, I know you and I have played the games. You probably played them more than I have. I went through quite a bit of the first one and, of course, the iconic opening scene of the second one.
I felt
like they captured kind of the essence of the Uncharted games pretty well, which is difficult to do with a movie. But to me, it had a James Bond meets Tomb Raider feel very much to it. And not that that's a bad thing, but I think, you know, that's the movie's got the potential to, I mean, it's hard because video game adaptations to the movie screen never usually work out too well. There's a handful of them, and this one's got the casting and it just feels like it's got the potential. Who's the other? It's Tom Holland. And who's the other main character?
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Oh, that guy. Yeah, exactly. So
Antonio Banderas is in it.
Yep. It's got the right casting.
It's a really strong cast. You know what? You know what did it for me, as far as the whole like Spider-Man shtick, the falling out of the back of the plane thing, and he's like running his way up the fucking cargo boxes as they're trailing out the back.
Straight from the game.
That's part of the game, though.
I get it, but it's like, and here's the thing: is if it wasn't
Tom, you could stop. You could stop after I get it.
No, I'm trying to explain here. If any other actor but Tom Holland or Orlando Bloom is doing that, I honestly think I might look at that scene differently, because I went Spider-Man, and if it would have been Orlando Bloom, Dave, where was I going to go?
To the Caribbean.
Lord of the Rings? Or, well,
it's Legolas.
Yeah.
Legolas, who ran up a falling fucking bridge in the shitty Hobbit movie.
And skated down the tusk of a mastodon, too. Oliphant, excuse me.
Oliphant, yes. There's a lot of things that I know. He's an elf, whatever. But I struggle in certain types of roles to see Orlando Bloom as anything other than, oh, look, it's the elf. Like Pirates of the Caribbean being the exception, because I guess they happen so close to each other that it kind of like, okay, Will Turner. And he's still doing like athletic deft swordplay things. And now he's old and still doing swordplay. I don't even know what Orlando's Bloom. What is he doing? Is he even in anything right now? Does anybody know what Orlando Bloom's up to?
Trying to say the rose has lost its bloom.
But Shane.
Maybe he's going to be in Amazon's Lord of the Rings series. Perhaps we get something out of that.
Okay, so should I, as somebody who's kind of on the fence, like I'm the on the fence guy with this movie, what should I do?
You should play the video game. You should play the second. You should play Uncharted 2, and then you should watch the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's
the beginning
fair.
of The beginning of Uncharted 2 is one of the greatest beginnings to any video game of its type all time. You'll be like, holy fuck, that was the beginning. OMG. Yeah. And I'm not even going to tell you what it is. And Dave knows exactly what I'm talking about. When I played it and you downloaded it because PlayStation gave you that and they gave you the Uncharted series and the game Journey when the pandemic hit, because people were at home. Yep. They're like, here's something to do. These games aren't just like mindless things. You have to actually use your brain to get through these games. So, Patrick, I think you'll play the second game and then you'll end up playing the first and third one even before you go see the movie, because I think it's the type of video game that you'll actually enjoy. You and the Junior O'Dowd could actually tackle this together, because if someone's playing and someone's watching what's going on, you're basically trying to mind your way through the game. So
yeah, it's a platformer with a tremendous story wrapped around it.
Awesome. And that's why it makes a great movie. We talked about some of the series we watched that you watch, like Mandalorian. We're like, okay, is the movie, are they making a video game in making a movie with a video game in mind? And where here, this is a video game where like the story is so great, it just lends itself to a movie. Like you said, Dave, huge fan.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you're looking at iconic video game opening scenes, Uncharted 2, Halo 2, those are the ones that jump right out at me.
Oh, for sure. Yep. Agreed. Great call.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Patrick O'Dowd has to play video games so that he can get on board with the Uncharted movie. We'll Shucks. See what happens. Yeah, twist my arm. I can't stand video games. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right. When we're now set up for our second commercial break, we are moving right along. This is looking to be a very efficient episode of Bandwagon Nerds. When we come back, we're going to go into some news around the nerdosphere. Before we go to our recorded commercial, I do want to remind you that if you love what we do here at thechairshot.com and the Chairshot Radio Network, and you want to support us, the best way to do that is to head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and invest in a Chairshot shirt. We have all kinds of designs for you to choose from. Everything from sayings about the show, from the shows like Everybody Hates Craig, hashtag journalism, to the Chairshot logo, to even the shirt of this very show you're listening to right here, Bandwagon Nerds. We've got all of those designs. They're great, great stuff. I myself recently acquired my edition of the Bandwagon Nerd shirt, and I love it. I spent the extra money to get it soft style because I wanted something feeling nice on my giblets. But if you're not feeling fancy, a shirt is only $19.99 with a little bit extra to get it done that soft style way. It takes a lot for us to put together this little network of ours, this little engine that could. And we appreciate all of the support because it allows us to continue to give you quality content every single day. So please, please, please head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and pick up an official chairshot.com t-shirt. When we come back, news around the nerdosphere. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
All right, gentlemen, it is now time for news around the nerdosphere. And we are going to kick off with an interesting little back-to-back pair of articles where Disney freaked everybody out. And then Kevin Feige was like, okay, everyone, just chill the F out. Let's take a breath. As Disney announced that they're going to be delaying a bunch of movies. And let's just go through it. So the movies that are being delayed, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness was previously dated to be hitting March 25th, 2022. It's now been moved to May 6th, 2022. Thor, Love and Thunder was previously dated for the May 6th, 2022 date, has now been moved to the July release date of July 8th, 2022. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever was originally dated for the July 8th, 2022 date, has now been moved to 11-11-22, which that's kind of a fun release date. 11 plus 11 equals 22. There you go. They also announced that an untitled Indiana Jones movie, which we all know they're making and apparently involves time travel, was slated to release July 29th. It's now been moved almost a full year.
Is that why Harrison Ford's real-life plane landings are so horrific? He's coming out of time travel?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't got good vibes on the untitled Indiana Jones movie, but it has been given basically an extra year to get itself worked out, as it will be releasing on June 30th, 2023. An untitled Disney live-action movie was dated for July 14th, 2023, removed from schedule. The Marvels, which was previously dated on 11-11-2022, has been moved to February 17th, 2023. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which was previously dated for the February 17th, 2023, has now been moved to Indiana Jones' spot of has been moved to July 28th, 2023. Sorry, Indiana Jones was 2022. An untitled Marvel movie dated for October 2023 has been removed from the schedule entirely. An untitled Marvel movie dated for November 10th, 2023 has been moved to 11-3-2024, I hope that's what that means. It says 11-3-2, which is a bad cut-and-paste job. And then an untitled 20th Century movie that was previously dated for October 20th, 2023, has been removed from the calendar. So that news comes out and everybody freaks out, because what does it all mean? So Kevin Feige came out and basically said that the changes were due to production shifts and changes. The films were still releasing in specific slots allotted to Marvel. All the Marvel slots, this is his quote, all the Marvel slots are the same. We're just shifting the movies coming out. And he pointed out, you know, that instead of there being 3 months between Marvel movies, there will now be 5 months. So he just talked about kind of expanding the gap a little bit. He did this interview with Variety, kind of calmed folks down. So gives time for some reshoots. Give some times for some other stuff to be completed. Maybe give you a little bit more leg room, a little bit more runway to complete things that you don't like. Dave, I'll start with you. First, when the news initially came out, what was your reaction? And after Kevin Feige said, calm the F down, did you in fact calm the F down?
I was honestly never panicked to begin with, to be honest with you, because I was just looking at, when you look at the slate of what they had scheduled, it just movie on top of movie on top of movie. I mean, even this year, you know, you're looking at what they've done since Black Widow hit. Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, Spider-Man No Way Home, all that within 6 months. And you know, you look at, people are like, you know, Kevin Feige's like, calm down and do this and do that. And you're just thinking, it's like, wow, people are really bitching about a couple month delay after what we just went through. And even if you go back before the pandemic, how long did we have to wait between Marvel movies back then? Right. And they were like,
well,
you maybe got two a year.
Talked about Black Widow Forever, right?
Yeah. Maybe you got two a year. So to me, it just seems like there's no, I mean, Marvel and Disney and Kevin Feige are like, we don't need to stack all this stuff on top of each other, especially when you consider we're interspersing, you know, we got Hawkeye coming out. We've got another series coming in here that's going to fill in the gap between these movies instead of just stacking everything on top of each other. I think it's just a kind of the pendulum kind of swinging back to the middle and Disney saying, you know what, let's space this stuff out. We don't need to get everything out there to make up for the pandemic right away. That's probably not a good marketing strategy. Let's space this stuff out. I'm fine with it. You know, there is no shortage of stuff coming out. If you're really worried that you're going to have nothing to watch, then come over and hang out, be a guest host on Bandwagon Nerds and deal with our drama on a weekly basis of trying to get through everything.
God,
I can piggyback right off of you, Dave, because yeah, I feel the same way. I'm almost glad there's a delay. There's so much streaming for us to watch. Like, there's things I have my eye on that I'm not going to get to for maybe a year, considering the schedule we keep, right? With throwing wrestling on top of that, right? So I'm okay with it. Like, you can slow the pace down as much as you'd like. That's completely fine with me. Say it every week, right, Patrick? As long as the story's good, just get it to me when you get it to me.
So, Dave, do you think that some of this, like, hysteria that we did see, like, in sort of the Twitterverse reaction is just sort of a gross overreaction to all the previous delays?
Absolutely.
That we heard about other stuff.
Absolutely. It's people panicking because they think they're reading something into it that there's not, and it's not there. Oh, they're delaying this because there's an issue with casting, or there's an issue with production, or we can't get this movie out like we thought we would, or we need to do reshoots. No, movies are pretty much done. They're just spacing this out. There's a financial aspect to it. There's a strategic aspect to it. I mean, there's no reason to shove six movies down your throat in 1 year. At some point you get oversaturation. And you don't want that. You don't want people going and saying, I'm sick of this stuff. This shit just came out 2 weeks ago. So I think it is a gross overreaction from a lot of people who don't really get this is why they're doing it.
I want to echo the value of spacing some of these out and making these a little bit more anticipatory, because one of the things I have seen in the land of the internet, which is already a toxic environment, and I'm impressed by how much Marvel has been able to kind of be Teflon, but there is this level of fatigue that I am starting to see, especially out of like a hardcore fan group. And some of it's hyperbolic from like directors saying stupid things about their productions. For example, the director of the last Spider-Man movie may have compared it to Endgame on some level, and people were like, yeah. But if you go back and you really read the quote, he's not comparing the movie to Endgame. He's saying that it's Peter Parker's Endgame, which in that sense kind of is with the whole Sony MCU deal and where
the word Endgame.
Yeah. Well, and the quote was intentional in doing it. But yeah, I think that, you know, maybe, yeah, creating some space and having, like, I liked when the Marvel schedule was very reliable, that you had a March, you know, or you had a Marchish May slash, you know, you had that March through May movie, then you had July, and then you had November. Boom, boom, boom. Three movies. It was like old school 1980s WWE pay-per-view schedule. You had those three movies. And I do think, you know, people overreacting or like reshoots and stuff. Reshoots don't always equal bad, everyone. And in some cases, this could, you know, gives the creators time.
It is
to kind of work that through.
Here's something I wanted to run by. You said Doctor Strange got moved from March to May, right?
Right.
And we know. There's a very big movie that we talked about last week coming out in March called The Batman. So why would you really, although Marvel doesn't have to be scared about competing with Warner or DC or whoever, but at the same time, they're smart enough to say, Batman's probably going to be a big deal. Maybe we should move this back a little bit and just shift everything. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I wouldn't be surprised if they said, you know, let's get away from the Batman and kind of put this out here when we know we can have a just the spot to ourselves, the spotlight on our product.
It's a mutually beneficial move when you really think about it. Like, absolutely. Both companies win in that regard because they're both going to make a ton of cash. So yeah, nothing to worry about here, fans. If you're one of those people freaking out, don't freak out. It's going to be okay. You're still going to get your Marvel movies. They haven't cut any Marvel movie. I think the one production that's getting the most maligned, if there was one, is the Marvels. I think people are just really gun shy about the Marvels and about, you know, Brie Larson takes so much heat over her portrayal of Carol Danvers, and I don't get it. And I hope that she gets some real opportunities to shine as a character. And that's been the promise we've been made for this, is that there's going to be a lot more examination into who Carol Danvers is in this sequel. So in addition to all the characters that we're excited to see come up, the next story out there is a Salt Shaker ready little bit of rumor. And Dave, were you the one who shared this, or was it Ray?
I think it was me
that shared the story.
I don't know if it was one of us. I don't know which one of us.
So one of you, and I'm too late. You know, I got Twitter up here. Let's jump back into the messages. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. One of you replied that, had sent out this article from blacksportsonline.com. So I'm already like, I don't know. I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna go back and look. But it speculates, or that there is a rumor, that a new Hulk solo movie may be coming. And let's see, who is this? The GWW is actually the one who reports that. And I don't even know what the GWW stands for, but the GWW
It was me. The two that you've got that we're talking about, they both came from me on consecutive tweets.
Has learned that a Hulk movie is on the way, and it is currently being called World War Hulk. This tells you how reliable the source is, by the way. Yes, we are finally have a new solo Hulk film in active development at Marvel Studios, and we were told it is currently slated to start production in late 2022, likely following the events of the upcoming She-Hulk series on Disney Plus. Okay, I'm not going to read the rest of it because it's more about it's pointless. One, I don't believe this rumor at all. And I think it's fun to talk about. There's a couple of reasons why I don't believe this rumor at all. One, we've already stolen imagery from the Planet Hulk / events that lead to World War Hulk in Thor Ragnarok. Two, to tell a World War Hulk movie requires a lot of buildup and work ahead of it that, I'm sorry, the She-Hulk series isn't going to do. So let's stop that. And three, you're already dealing with a big-time multiversal storyline. You can't thrust the World War Hulk in there because of the devastation that it wrought on Earth 616 in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Just can't do it.
Right. I tend to agree with you. I don't find a lot of credibility to this rumor, except for maybe the fact that the rights to Hulk may be reverting to Marvel in Disney. Maybe there, sure. that I could see, but
that's the story you tell.
No, it's not. And I think, and that's the thing, is it's like, and we know that Marvel strays away from canon and the source material fairly frequently. That's an awfully big deviation. And I don't know how you basically go from, like you were saying, we got to see Planet Hulk to some extent with Thor Ragnarok. He's already been back on Earth in Endgame, and he's been a big part of the end of Endgame. So how do you get to the point where he's back on Sakaar and deciding he's pissed off at Iron Man, who's dead, and Reed Richards, who we haven't seen yet, and then you're going to bring him to Earth to basically get even with all these characters who are either dead or not introduced yet? So yeah, I don't see World War Hulk. I even if you try to explain it away in She-Hulk, that's not going to make any difference. I think you could see a Hulk movie, but it's certainly not going to be this storyline.
The only way I could see that happening is if it was like a one-off movie from like the second season of What If.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean? I doubt that. That's like, I can connect the dots there at least.
Right. There's just so much legwork. You have to introduce the concept of the Illuminati in the MCU, which they haven't done at all. Like, the closest hint we've gotten to an Illuminati was actually the post-credit scenes of Shang-Chi. And even that was Wong talking to Bruce Banner and Carol Danvers. Like, that wasn't even close to anything like that. The Illuminati, make a decision for the planet. We haven't been introduced to Namor. We haven't been introduced to Reed Richards, as you said. Tony Stark is dead. We haven't been introduced to Black Bolt, who is a member of the Illuminati. Like, we haven't been introduced to Charles Xavier, who is a member of the Illuminati. There's just too many, like, there's all these floating pieces out there. And you could make a different Illuminati. I'm not saying you couldn't do that. But even if you make a new one, who's in that group out of the MCU? There's just not enough pieces there to do that part. And then you have to have Bruce Banner, this character, and the Hulk do something so egregious to warrant blasting him off world again. After Hulk willingly blasted itself off world, himself off world, because of the way he was betrayed by Natasha, basically. So, and then the aftermath, because when Hulk comes to Earth, he gets his retribution. He wipes shit out. It's a big problem.
Ray made the post after that thing was posted. He's like, I had no desire to see this because it's basically Hulk kills the MCU. Hulk kills the MCU, and that's the end of the MCU. And he's got a point that, you know, and he was saying, tongue in cheek, at least, saying, why don't we just bring Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe? Let's bring that storyline in there. Yeah, the only way it works is, like Tunney says, if Marvel adopts a DC philosophy for a movie or two and says, we're just going to throw this live action what if bullshit out there just for funsies and see how you like it, which I don't think Marvel fans will gravitate towards that at all, because they need their continuity. You know that.
They really do. And yeah, it's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So fans, I don't believe it. I don't see it coming. Neither does the rest of the bandwagon. We are calling some heavy bullshit on this rumor. And if we're proven wrong, well, we'll be back on this podcast, I'm sure, admitting that we were indeed not correct. But I'm not too worried about it. All right. So this next one, as Dave mentioned, is another story that he shared with us in our chat that we keep going as we try to keep ourselves apprised on what's going on in the world. And Dave, I'm actually going to hand it over to you to talk about, to kind of kick this off, because we got some updates regarding the Green Lantern series. The one thing I will tell you, I forgot who Finn Wolfhard was.
That's good. So did I. But I, you know, the thing about this one, unlike the Hulk story, I tend to believe this one. This one sounds like something that HBO Max has got in the works. It's going to be grand in scope. It's going to be...
Finn Wittrock. Wolfhard is the kid from Stranger Things. Wittrock is the one who's playing Guy Gardner.
Oh, yeah. I think we heard casting news about him a long time ago. But yeah, it had been quiet on the Green Lantern front for quite a while. But the rumor is hot and heavy that HBO Max is developing a Green Lantern series exclusively for HBO Max. The showrunner is talking about that this thing is going to, we don't know, we don't have a release date, we don't have any sort of estimate as to when it's coming, but just listening to what he says, that it's going to be grand in scope, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I tend to have a feeling that this one probably has a lot more credibility than the World War Hulk story, simply because Green Lantern has been very conspicuous by his absence in the DCEU. We haven't seen anything since 2011, when Ryan Reynolds did the live action movie.
Made that mistake.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got, I mean, and he is clearly one of the most beloved characters in all the DC universe and one of the most powerful. And there's been rumors. I know in the early days when they had superhero calendars, you know, the Green Lantern Corps movie was supposedly coming out in 2020 or 2022. Obviously that didn't happen, but I tend to think that this one's got some credibility to it. Green Lantern seems like a natural series when you look at what DC's done with the whole Arrowverse, and now kind of you look at some of this other stuff, Doom Patrol, notably Titans, Young Justice, we know that's animated. I tend to think Green Lantern, the Green Lantern Corps, is a natural fit. It would be a huge, huge boon to HBO Max to get a show like that on on there. And I mean, and the possibilities are endless. I don't know what happens with the CW stuff, but a Green Lantern Flash, I mean, I'm sure Tunney's still listening in, a Green Lantern Flash crossover at some point. Oh my God, that just seems too natural. They've got too much history with each other. So I tend to think this one's true. I'm anxiously awaiting to see if we get more details about the show, but yeah, Green Lantern coming to HBO Max, or the Green Lantern Corps coming to HBO Max. I think that's, I feel very confident that this one's on the level.
Yeah, I do too. Give me, we know Patrick is not a DC guy, and Patrick has his knowledge of DC comics is very, very limited. Give me two Guy Gardner centric Green Lantern stories you'd like to see them tackle in a Green Lantern core series.
God, I don't remember off the top of my head. I mean, I've always been a Hal Jordan. I tell you what, though, if they bring the Sinestro Corps War to this series in season, like somewhere in series season one or season two, I think that's tailor made for a huge success. Yeah, I'd like to see Guy Gardner, because he's got a lot of issues with Superman over the years. That's something I kind of would like to see them bring to the forefront, because Guy's a different kind of Green Lantern. That's for sure. He's not like Hal or like John Stewart or like Kyle Rayner or any of those guys. So I would love to see, you know, I can't think of any real Guy Gardner centric stories that jump to mind, but anything involving the Green Lantern Corps at this point in time would be fun. And yeah, that's my biggest hope is, like, well, if we're not doing a Green Lantern movie, you could use the series to introduce the Sinestro Corps War. And that would be a big hit for HBO Max, I think, if it's done right.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll have to look and see if that's what we can pull off. All right. Last story in the Nerdosphere, I think also shared by, was this one, I think was also shared by you, or maybe it was shared by Ray. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. Hollywood Reporter put out a news story on Friday, the 22nd, reporting something that we already knew, if I'm not mistaken, but that Hayden Christensen is reprising his role of Anakin Skywalker for Ahsoka, the latest Star Wars live action series from Lucasfilm and Disney Plus. Plot details are quiet. We know Dave Filoni is writing. We know Jon Favreau is producing, or is executive producer. I can only assume this is a Force Ghost thing.
Yeah, Ray shared this one.
I can only assume that this is a redeemed Anakin Force Ghost coming back to Ahsoka after the events of Return of the Jedi, because that's where we've last seen Rosario Dawson's Ahsoka Tano. And I'm assuming that her character and her story is picking up from her role in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I don't see how else you can do this. I mean, it's 5 years after Jedi. Anakin's gone. Vader's gone. It's got to be Anakin as a Force ghost guiding Ahsoka Tano in her pursuit of, we're assuming, Grand Admiral Thrawn. So I don't see any other way that makes any sense. I mean, maybe you get some flashbacks or something, or maybe they are going to bring her fight against Darth Vader from Rebels into a live action as a flashback. Now, that would be kind of cool, but otherwise, sure. I don't see any other way you can do it. It's interesting to me that, as lukewarm as most of us were about Hayden Christensen's portrayal of Anakin, the Star Wars fans out there are all a buzz and all a Twitter about Hayden coming back and portraying this role. They are completely on board, showing the power of nostalgia all the way here. But yeah, I think that I know we both had mentioned it when we saw this. It's got to be a Force ghost. I don't see any other way this makes any sense.
I was always a fan of Hayden Christensen and the role he already has played in Star Wars. I think the analysis on how he's going to come back from you guys makes a lot of sense, considering I think that's the last way we saw him as well. Like him, not Darth Vader, but now back as Anakin, as a Jedi. And, you know, you've seen him in that blue kind of ghosty thing already. So it makes a lot of sense. It's Star Wars, man. Let's fucking do it.
Well, what's interesting to me is, like, you know, what'll be cool about it, though, is that we don't know if Ahsoka has any idea as to what Anakin Vader's fate was, other than that he's gone. So that first time where he appears in front of her, if she doesn't know that he was redeemed by Luke, that's going to be a very tense first meeting based on where they last saw each other, which was in Rebels. So that part, right. I'm very interested to see how they do that. Whether Ahsoka knows that Luke redeemed his father, her former, her former master. So that's going to be a fun part to see.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of meat on the bone there. And here's the thing: is we're doing what nerds do, and be like, he's going to be this huge focal point and this big part of the show and all this. You know, like, get out your pocket protectors, start being like, you know, he's going to be. Every single episode is going to be this huge thing. It could be one episode, be like a one-off episode, maybe two. Like, we don't know. The fact that they're announcing him in the show doesn't lend me to believe that, but it's definitely a thing that could happen, and I think it'd be hilarious. Like, we're getting all amped up over Anakin Skywalker being in the Ahsoka Tano series, and, you know, he's like a Force ghost once, maybe twice.
Yes.
And that'd be so on point. But I'm good for Hayden Christensen. I think, honestly, at the end of the day, like, I remember him, the things that I really thought he did well in that role. He definitely had the conveyance of anger down to a T. I thought that some of his scenes with Natalie Portman lacked, I think, the nicest way to chemistry would be the way that I would describe it. Because, like, there were just a lot of wooden acting between the two of them both, and they're both fine actors elsewhere. So that always surprised me, and not necessarily just one of their fault. That, you know, the script also had a bit to do with that as well. Anyway, there you have it, folks. News from around the Nerdosphere. Not a lot to cover this week. We're going to move into Patrick O'Dowd has a question.
Is mayonnaise an instrument? Want to go jelly fishing? What am I supposed to do all day while you're at school? Can I use your bathroom? Who's your friend? What does claustrophobic mean? You know what the problem is.
All right. So today I rediscovered a series I really, really forgot how much I enjoyed. And I shared it in the chat. Netflix has this little mini documentary series called Explain. And it's kind of cool because they're like 15 to 25 minute long documentaries about, like, a specific topic. And they range all over the place from, like, today alone, I watched an episode on fairy tales to earthquakes, or not earthquakes, to hurricanes, to plastic surgery, to this one about time. And I remember, as I was watching this episode, just my mind was really blown away by this, like, concept of what time could be, and all these different theories about, you know, everything already existing in this weird sort of three-dimensional mind. And it just completely, like, I did this to my kid. I was like, with the hands on the forehead, and blew the head, except I had my mind blown by this 20-minute documentary that made me be like, man, I got to check out some other documentaries about time. And, like the concept of time travel and time and space-time and all that. So my question to the two of you is there a piece of, whether it's literature, novel, television, and it could be fiction, it could be nonfiction or otherwise, that the first time you watched it, the concepts involved or the show involved completely blew your mind? And what were those shows? Tony's like, Jesus.
I will say this, that the movie Somewhere in Time and how they deal with the concept of time travel is something that I don't think I've seen done anywhere else since then. And I know, Pat, you've seen the movie as well. I don't know if Tunney's seen it as well. The concept of hypnotizing yourself to believe that you could travel back in time and to have that actually manifest in some respect, but it kind of being this flimsy manifestation because he sees a fucking penny with the present date on it and it sucks him back to the present. I sat there with people and we tried to like map out how did this whole thing work together? You know, how did this timeline in this movie work? Cause she goes to him at the college and then he goes back in time, but how does he go back? How's her picture there? It's a fascinating, the movie is obviously a love story, but there's something bigger going on with that movie. Robert Matheson wrote that. He's we talked horror authors earlier. He's one of the more renowned ones, and that's not really a horror movie, but it is a science fiction-y sort of thing. That's the one that jumps out to me immediately. Is like the first time I saw that. Yeah, Jane Seymour. Yeah, the love story. Yeah, Christopher Reeve. But the way they handle time travel in that movie, I've never seen anybody approach it that way since then. And that's the one that the first thing that comes to my mind.
Excellent. Mr. Tunney?
As a young teenager listening to License to Ill for the first time all the way through, as a little bit older teenager getting a PlayStation and playing that all night when I first got it. And then movie-wise, two come to mind, like Cube. Was just an awesome mind fuck of a kind of a horror thriller that I enjoyed. And maybe it was just the time at which I watched it and the age I was and who I was with and what was going on. But Eyes Wide Shut was like, whoa, that was fucking crazy. So there's a wide range of different, media consumption there for you.
Yeah, Kubrick will mess with anybody's head if you catch the right film. So a couple for me, definitely plot twists that kind of blew my mind a little bit. Fight Club, the big reveal in Fight Club, and then was like, God damn it, I should have seen that coming. The Sixth Sense, also same sort of deal. I remember being so into The Sixth Sense and did not know the twist until the twist happened. And it was like, that was really cleverly done. But the ultimate kind of mind blowing experience for me is the twist / cliff you are left at the end of this horror movie audition. And I've talked about it once already on this show, but I've never finished a movie and been so thoroughly confused and unsettled and wanting to know what the hell I just saw, whether it was real or not, or a premonition of what was to come until after I watched the movie audition. And I strongly recommend it. If you're squeamish, the last 20 minutes of that movie are not for you, but the payoff at the end and the twist, I love it. I ate it up and it blew my mind. All right, gentlemen.
Can I add a couple more that I just thought of listening to you?
You have to be quick because I am on a calendar, sir. But yes, go
for it. The Matrix is one that gets you actually thinking when it's all done. And the what's in the box scene from Seven, the way they just flip that fucking thing around on you. Those are a couple other ones that just listening to you guys talk jump to the forefront for me.
Lost Highway.
There's some good stuff out there, guys. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Before we get out of here, everybody, why don't we tell folks where they can find you on the socials? Dave went first last week, so this week we will kick it off with PC Tunney.
Follow me at PC Tunney on Twitter, Facebook, and continue to listen to everything Chairshot Radio Network, streaming on whatever is your favorite platform. And don't forget to always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head
with attitude, bitch.
You can find me on Twitter at I told you the Packers had nothing to worry about, Tunney.
I wasn't worried. Felt a lot like last week.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at AttitudeAg and on Facebook.com/ Attitude of Aggression. I need a real football team.
Aaron Rodgers still owns us. I get it. You can follow me on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. Also, make sure that you follow Bandwagon Nerds at Bandwagon Nerds. Easy to remember, easy to follow. Trying to keep some good content out there up for you every day. As I said before, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Now, get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and hey, go watch some mind-bending, mind-blowing movies, television shows. They're all out there. Great stuff. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Yourself.
You will not take her from me!
Your anger and your lust for power have already done that. You have allowed this Dark Lord to twist your mind until now you have become the very thing you swore to destroy.
Don't lecture me, Obi-Wan. I see through the lies of the Jedi. I do not fear the dark side as you do. I have brought peace, freedom, justice, and security to my new empire.
Your new empire? Don't make me kill you. Anakin, my allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes. I will do what I must.
You will try.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.